VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. I'm Max Brown, along with my colleague and friend, Roy Saunderson, and we're from Rideau's Recognition Institute. Roy, once again, another great show. I think people are going to be very excited about what we have in store today.
Absolutely. I think as we look at the concept of trust, I mean, how many surveys keep coming out where people are lacking in the trust of their leaders, their organizations, and the people they live with.
Without a doubt. And yet, while we talk about trust, and perhaps it's something that's been discussed for decades, achieving it is a whole other matter. And I think our guest today will be able to shed some great light on that. Our guest is Greg Link. He's the co-author of Smart Trust, written with Stephen M. R. Covey and contributor Rebecca R. Merrill. Greg is the co-founder of Covey Link, Franklin Covey's Global Speed of Trust Practice, and the former Covey Leadership Center. He's a trusted executive confidant, advisor, and compelling speaker. Link is a recognized authority on trust, leadership, sales and marketing, and high performance. He led the strategy that propelled Covey's father's book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, to be one of the two most influential business books of the 20th century. Greg, it is great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. It's wonderful to be with you, both of you, Roy and Max.
Well, thank you so much. And to begin, can you tell us why this book, you know, as Roy mentioned earlier, we talk about trust a lot, but sometimes I think it's taken for granted. Why this message? Why Smart Trust?
Well, trust is the most compelling form of human motivation, and it's driven our behavior and our economies for centuries in our personal lives, and yet we take it for granted. The French proverb, fish discover water last. We don't notice trust until it's low or polluted. Just like the fish don't notice the water unless it becomes low or polluted, we don't notice trust. And we had a great wake-up call in the latest economic crisis that trust drives our economy. As you know, we're a consumer-based economy, and the consumer confidence is the lowest in history. Trust in government and business is the lowest in history since they've been keeping track of it. So it is a very timely subject, and those organizations that get good at it will be the ones that win in this new economy.
Boy, it's an important topic, and you call it smart trust. Can you describe what that is?
Yeah, smart trust, you know, we're not talking about blind trust or stupid trust. Mm-hmm. We're not talking to just Pollyanna, be willing to trust everybody. It really is a skill, and it is something that requires, first of all, a desire, a bias to trust, what we call a propensity to trust, and balanced with our natural skepticism and analysis and the sweet spot between the propensity to trust and the analysis is what we call smart trust or judgment. It's really the skill that allows you to trust in a low-trust world, to manage the risks of trusting in a low-trust world.
Mm-hmm. And so, like you said, it's not a blind trust or a stupid trust, but it's this balance that you can actually move forward with. I found in the book something very interesting as well, and it makes a lot of sense, but if you could talk about this a bit further, the case for how trust and prosperity are interconnected.
Yeah, and that is key. There is a business case for trust. The age-old myth, many people feel that you either have trust or you don't. and that it's just kind of a nice social virtue. We suggest that it's a hard-driving economic driver. It's there's a business case for trust. You can measure it. You can get better at it. And as a matter of fact, it's the metric of the most successful companies. High-trust companies are 3 times more profitable than low-trust companies. And so this whole idea, you know, everything in business is a function of two things, speed and cost. And when trust is low, everything slows down. And everything costs more. And we call that a trust tax. When trust is high, in high trust organizations or high trust situations, things move very quickly. You can make decisions faster. And the costs actually go down. And so we call that a trust dividend. So it's counterintuitive behavior, particularly in this current economy where everybody's afraid to trust anybody. The risks are high. They're very skeptical. They've seen the headlines for years. And as a result, the companies that are able to develop the skill of smart trust actually have a unique and specific competitive advantage in this current circumstances. Because if you can get good at building trust and extending trust in a low-trust world and managing that risk and teaching your people how to manage that risk, it really does have a tremendous impact on the bottom line.
Yeah, boy. So I there's going to be so much to talk about within this topic. Can you give us some examples of organizations who have figured this out?
Yeah, one of the best and most current examples is Zappos, which I'm sure your listeners are familiar with, the online shoe retailer. Tony Hsieh, we talked to him as we did the book and did the research. He grew a organization from zero to $1 billion in the worst economic time in history. And we asked Tony how he did it, and he said, well, it was really simple, two things. I trusted my employees, and I trusted my customers. And if you don't know their business model, it's an online shoe sales situation where they actually trust their customers to return the shoes that they don't like or don't fit, and they have free shipping both ways. And that requires a tremendous amount of trust to not get taken advantage of. He also trusts his employees. His new book is called Delivering Happiness, which talks about the whole idea of having a high-trust culture and trusting your people. And if you trust your people, they will take care of your customers, and everybody wins. And so they are the poster child, if you will, of the performance of a high-trust organization in this low-trust and worst-case economy.
Boy, they sure are, and we've had them on the show to talk about that as well. It's a fascinating place. In fact, my own wife has experienced that. You know, shipping shoes back, and they ship the new shoes out before you even ship the other ones back. They do trust you.
Right.
They really do.
That's
trust
the
you.
Ultimate trust. Yes.
It is, and they just move forward. You know, so this could be to my disadvantage because she really likes that company.
Yes,
I don't know how many people. There's a lot of people that like that company, and they're doing some killer stuff. I mean, their employees love being where they're, and you know, I'm careful to talk about companies with respect. I mean, they all feel like, you know, they can be better. So I don't mean it in terms of hero worship, but I do think what you're talking about is the epitome of a company that has figured out that trust is a profitable way to do business.
Well, one of the powerful things that Tony did is, and he requested his managers take the employees out on company time and pays them to go out and do social things on company time, because under the premise that he said, people trust people they know. People trust their friends more than they do coworkers. And so by being able to get them to have that relationship and more of a family kind of a relationship, that they actually, you know, have each other's back, and they take better care of the customers.
They sure do. They sure do. Now, a lot of people have known trust is important, and at least it's been talked about, you know, for a very long time. So why is it so difficult to achieve, or why does it seem so difficult to achieve?
Well, it's risky. And again, we're not talking about blind trust, stupid trust. We're talking about smart trust, where you balance your bias to trust people and give people the benefit of the doubt and to assume that people are basically good, as Pierre Omidyar did when he founded eBay. And it is difficult because people keep acting in their own selfish best interest. And
yes,
to subordinate that, the great companies, the great leaders, the great people in history have subordinated their self-interest to others, to mutual benefit. That's the higher law. That's what drives the economy and drives businesses. And it is hard to achieve because you do need to risk. You do need to be willing to risk. The mantra of most entrepreneurs is, I can do it better myself. Well, that's great, but you're not going to grow an organization. You've got to learn to trust your partners, your shareholders, your other stakeholders in your business, your employees, your customers, if you're ever going to grow an enterprise.
Yeah, it's and for you, there are some specific actions we can take, at least according to the book that you wrote. The first three of those five actions, perhaps we could start there, and then we'll get into the other two later in the show. But could you just describe for us, what are some of the actions we can take, and what do they mean?
Yeah, briefly, to give you some context, we've been working for 25 years with organizations all over the world, and we found that the common denominator of their success and their failure was trust. And as we interviewed them and queried them, we came to identify five actions that are common to these high-trust leaders and high-trust organizations. The first one is they believe in trust. They have a basic belief that people can be trusted and have a propensity to trust. I mentioned Pierre Omidyar a minute ago. He's the founder of eBay, and they based the eBay enterprise on the fact that people are basically good. Everybody was very skeptical of the eBay business model, where you're trusting strangers all over the world to do what they say they're going to do. And Pierre Omidyar, when he was interviewed, said what they asked him what the most incredible thing about eBay was, and he said the fact that 135 million people, strangers, were able to trust each other. And so that belief in trust, the belief that people are basically good, is the first underlying action that high-trust leaders and high-trust companies do. It's a starting point. And then secondly, they take responsibility. They start with themselves. We have a phrase, you know, the minute you think the problem's out there, that very thought is the problem. You can't talk your way out of a problem that you behaved your way into. So this personal responsibility, am I credible? There's two sides to trust. The character side, which we're all familiar with, and that becomes synonymous. People think that trust means integrity, and certainly it does. That's a price of entry in this day and age. But it's equally important that people are competent, that they do what they say they're going to do, that they perform, they have a track record. And so there's that two-sided element of trust that forms your own personal credibility. Are you credible? Can you be counted on? Are you trusted? And that's the penetrating question to ask. The high trust people, the action that they take is they really concentrate on their own credibility, and they take responsibility first. They first look to themselves and their responsibility in a circumstance before they start to blame the circumstances or blame others. And so by having that personal credibility and developing that character and competence, they have dramatically more influence. And then third, high trust people are transparent. They declare their intent. They're open. They are willing to not be secretive. And one of the things in business that we emphasize, and you can think about it in sales, if you get the deal or the relationship and you don't get the trust, you really haven't gotten anywhere. So the idea is to be transparent and to be open with people, to open your agenda, not have hidden agendas. Because when you think about it, when you don't do that and you hold your objectives close to the vest, if you will, hold your agenda close to your vest, the other person really can't hear what you're trying to persuade them of, because they're too busy going, where is she going with this? Where's this going to lead? But if you take that sword out of their hand and declare your agenda up front and are open with it and declare your intent, then that gives them the psychological air to actually listen to what you're trying to explain to them. And if most business models, if people will actually understand what you're trying to accomplish, they will be much more successful, and it lowers the resistance.
I, I really appreciated this point in the book. In fact, there was a quote that really struck me when you said this. You said, "We consistently find the twin behaviors of declaring intent and assuming positive intent to be two of the most neglected yet highest leveraged actions leaders and organizations can take to create smart trust." I know you've talked about it a bit already, but could you explain that a little bit further? Why are these twin behaviors of declaring intent and assuming positive intent two of the most neglected yet highest leveraged actions we could have?
Yeah, very good. I spoke about declaring intent, and I didn't mention the twin behavior, which is assuming positive intent in others. Just like the Omidyar and eBay assume that people are basically good.
Yeah.
The best example is when I drive, my wife is very good at helping me with this. If somebody pulls out in front of me, I'm convinced they looked me right in the eye and deliberately pulled out in front of me. And Annie suggests that there may have been another possibility, that maybe that wasn't their intent. That maybe they have a sick child or they didn't see me. There's other possibilities. And so by giving people the benefit of the doubt, starting with a propensity to trust, that assuming that people are basically good, assuming positive intent in others, that they are very much like you and that they really are looking for mutual benefit and not jumping to conclusions, opens up again this transparent conversation of possibility at a different level of play than does distrust and suspicion. So it really is the fuel for innovation and business and creativity and collaboration. I mean, in a low-trust organization, you might be able to coordinate. You might even be able to cooperate if you have a little bit more trust. But true collaboration, where the juice is in growing businesses and growing relationships, requires trust. It requires a high level of trust and assuming good intent in each other.
Well, I am grateful you're here for this conversation. We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we will continue this conversation with Greg Link, co-author of Smart Trust. You're listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio with my colleague and friend Roy Saunders and myself, Max Brown, on the Voice America Business Channel. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs, strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
The business community's first choice in Internet talk radio. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. Getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. I'm Roy Saunderson, along with my colleague Max Brown. And we're grateful for our guest today, Greg Link, the co-author of Smart Trust and the co-founder of Covey Link, Franklin Covey's global speed of trust practice, and the former Covey Leadership Center. Greg, I'm just fascinated as we talk about this. I think certainly trust is coming more to the forefront, and I think we're
I know you believe, and I think we're seeing the same thing. There's a bit of a renaissance occurring on bringing trust a little bit more to the forefront and elevating it. How do you see that? What examples are you observing?
Yeah, Roy, we're very optimistic. We're seeing behaviors all over the world in organizations that are finding that a business model and exhibiting some of these actions of high trust companies is really a better way to run their companies. The economy for decades, for centuries, has been based upon mutual benefit and trust and growing our organizations, and unfortunately, of late, it's kind of a paradox. We're in the lowest trust world in history, and so people are suspicious of each other. They've heard all the story, horror stories of Bernie Madoff and other people taking advantage of people. And so it really takes some courage to stand tall and behave in ways that inspire trust and to give trust to your customers and your people. And we're finding more and more organizations are doing that. And a lot of it, I think, is being the renaissance is being driven by a number of factors. But I think the Internet is one of them, where the whole concept of transparency that we're seeing in the Arab Spring and all that, where people have more information available to themselves, both in businesses and in governments, it lends itself to hold the leadership to a higher, more transparent standard. And as a result, trust is coming to the forefront again, which we feel is a very healthy thing. And we're very excited to see all over the world, in every economy and every organization or country that we speak in. And we've taught this in over 39 countries so far. There is a renaissance of trust, and people are recognizing that it's a key factor, and they're wanting to be more credible and behave in ways that inspire trust.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've seen evidence, as you said, through the social media, where it's things like Domino's Pizza, you know, where you get those guys caught behind the counter doing the wrong things, and that creates the transparency where the CEO has to come on and make a very bold declaration, as I think the word you would be using, through a YouTube video back. How have you seen transparency really becoming a real changer, a game changer for businesses today?
Well, it's a tremendous game changer because it's holding them accountable to a higher standard. It's making it so they have to do what they say they're going to do. It used to be that you could have a customer problem and you could quietly behind the scenes solve that problem or not. You could even ignore and take advantage of customers and not deal with it. Nobody would know. There's a great YouTube video called United Destroys the Guitars or something along those lines. And this rock band had some of their guitars damaged in baggage on an airline, and they tried to get restitution, and they were ignored. And so they wrote a song about that, a music video that became viral to the point where the airline was trying to give them their money back, so they quit. They said, "Oh, we don't want the money. Give the money to charity," because, quite frankly, the viral video has been so beneficial to our band. And so it really makes organizations stand tall and look out and say, "Hey, boy, if we aren't fair with this person, if we don't live to the values and of our mission statement and the values we aspire to, we're going to get called on it publicly." And that, I think, is the lever that is changing the game tremendously, as there are a number of others, but that's a primary thing.
Now, obviously, some leaders are going to be listening to our show today, and they're recognizing this need for trust. They're recognizing the need for this transparency. But where do they begin? If they're not kind of used to doing this, what are some of the steps you tend to recommend?
Well, the simple, you know, gaining trust and restoring trust are the basics is pretty simple. And we've come out of a command and control model based on the military industrial complex for the last few decades. And we then started talking about open management and release style management in the 70s and 80s. And it's really now coming to bear in this renaissance of trust that it is the best way to lead an organization and whatnot. And so leaders on the surface, there's a reciprocity in trust. The counterintuitive principle is that the more you trust people, the more they'll want to return that trust. And so by trusting your people, the only way you can grow your organization is to trust your customers and trust your people. And so the best way to earn their trust is to do what you say you're going to do, which is the fourth action that we haven't gotten to yet. But after you declare your intent and are transparent about what you intend to do, then following through and doing what you say you're going to do builds trust. In other words, make a promise and keep it. That's the fastest way to build trust or restore trust in a relationship or in an organization. And so service recoveries for businesses are becoming more and more important. There's numerous examples of this in business history. The one that is forefront in many people's minds, at least in my age, this was 25 years ago for some of your younger listeners that may not be aware of it, but Johnson & Johnson, the Tylenol scare,
oh, right.
Where somebody put some cyanide in some Tylenol capsules, and the CEO, Burke, took responsibility and at tremendous financial risk, took hundreds of millions of dollars of inventory off the shelf to protect their customers. That was a heroic act to put the trust of the customers first and the outcome for the business second. And when you do those heroic things and have service recoveries, they become legendary companies, because brands are just trust monetized. And when you grow a good brand, and Johnson & Johnson has been on the top of the most trusted and admired companies in America for 25 years since then. And it's interesting, we don't have time to get into it, but recently they did have make a couple of mistakes, but because they understood the principle and they admitted that they were wrong and asked for forgiveness and then made it right, they've restored their trust again. So it is a principle that is consistent, because no organization or individual or leader is perfect. So this whole idea of being responsible for your actions and doing what you say you're going to do really does inspire trust quickly and restore it when it's lost.
That's powerful. Well, let's get into that fourth action of smart trust that you alluded to about do what they say and they're going to do so. We know that exclusive self-interest destroys trust, and that the agenda that best builds trust, of course, is mutual benefit, as you've mentioned in the show. So why does it seem that so many leaders, seem to get self-absorbed, struggle with this exclusive self-interest disguised as a mutual benefit?
Yeah, Roy, it's really a dilemma because it's counterintuitive. It's very counterintuitive. And if we take it down to the personal level, in our individual lives and in our individual relationships, we don't want to take responsibility. We want to win all the time. Sure, we give lip service to the fact we want you to win too, but very few people have a win-win mentality, this mutual benefit that we teach. And it is counterintuitive because we are fundamentally survivalist, if you will. So our first instinct is to protect ourselves. And so the whole idea of being willing to risk the profits of the company for the sake of protecting the customers in this Johnson & Johnson case that we just mentioned is counterintuitive. It doesn't seem to be the right thing to do, but trust is reciprocal. It's, again, something that the irony is that by extending trust, you actually get more trust.
Right.
By taking the risk of giving people the benefit of the doubt and extending trust, you're going to get more trust. And so by doing what you say you're going to do, you gain a tremendous amount of credibility. And at the end of the day, credibility is influence. You trust people not only that have integrity in the character side, as we mentioned, but also the competence that do what they say they're going to do, that follow through. And so, yes, it's difficult. Yes, it's counterintuitive. Yes, there's risk in trusting. But the greater risk is to not trust.
So this really falls right next into the fifth action of smart trust, about lead out in extending trust to others then, doesn't it?
It does, and that's the summum bonum of the whole concept of smart trust. At the end of the day, to grow your business and to expand your economy if you're at the country level, it really does require us to extend trust to others. The mantra of an entrepreneur is, I can do it better myself. And you just can't grow an organization. You've got to build a team. You've got to grow. You've got to extend trust to others. And it is risky. And therefore, this, for the sake of the relationship, for the sake of the business enterprise, you've got to be smart about it. You can't be stupid about it. You've got to hire for it, train for it, hold people accountable. And so we suggest that the best way is, to the best starting point, is to start with a bias to trust. Give people the benefit of the doubt, and then do your analysis, and then you make a judgment call based upon three vital variables, situation at hand, the risk, how visible is the risk, how important is the risk, how tremendous is the risk, what's the likelihood of the worst case happening, and then third, based upon the people involved, what's the character and competence of the person that you're extending this trust to, what's their track record, what's their history, and you can get really good at this, and the companies that have gotten good at this, the leaders that have gotten good at this, Warren Buffett's the poster child of this. He's an operator, he's an investor, but many people don't know he also operates those 78 companies that they've acquired. So Warren Buffett has 78 direct reports. CEOs that report to him, and he and Charlie Munger say that they're able to do that by having an extended web of deserved trust. And that deserved trust means that it's not just unconditional trust, it's smart trust. It's deserved, it's earned by their behavior, by doing what they say they're going to do.
Boy, who would have thought that when you said the statement, I trust you, that it could involve so much.
Oh, I know. Well, and that's the other irony is that, when you say to somebody, I don't trust you, those are fighting words.
Yeah.
So we suggest that you separate the person from the behavior. And so rather than saying, I don't trust you, you identify some behaviors that people exhibit that cause you to trust them, but then maybe identify a behavior that, like, for example, you I really like that you are transparent and you talk straight and you have go for mutual benefit, but we help me to trust you more if you would just listen to me. Sometimes I feel you don't listen. And so now you've separated the person from the behavior and you're able to actually have a conversation for possibility about how you might get better at understanding and earning others' trust.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So much and so little time to talk about this today. I tell you, Greg, we're going to have to take another quick break here. But for our listeners, I invite you to come right back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. And we're going to go even deeper on this great topic of smart trust with our guest today, Greg Link. I'm Roy Saunderson for Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, inviting you to join us back along with Max Brown.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and myself, Max Brown, and of course our guest today, Greg Link, co-author of Smart Trust and co-founder of Covey Link, Franklin Covey's Global Speed of Trust Practice, and the former Covey Leadership Center. Greg, in this book, I really enjoyed reading it, and I do get the chance to review and read lots and lots of books. This is one of those that, you know, there's lots of good information here, and I find content, and I'm always bending pages and underlining things, and the book is all marked up. One of the things that strikes me is that you highlight a lot of executives like Jim, the CEO at Costco, or the Whole Foods Market CEO, John Mackey, who they've both refused massive compensation packages for themselves, and they really do live their lives as servant leaders. Do you believe that executive behavior can build or slash erode trust? I mean, based on how they show up, you know, because walking the talk is to declare it, but then to just make sure you're taking care of yourself. I mean, sometimes there's this disconnect, and yet you highlighted some guys that are really, really aligned.
Well, yeah, and this is becoming more and more part of this renaissance of trust. First of all, Max, thanks for the comments about the book. I mean, that means a lot because you have a high level of discernment because you do pay the price and learn. And one of the great behaviors of high trust leaders is that we get better. We constantly are trying to improve and exposing yourself and your listeners to various lines of thought and books is a big contribution. I appreciate that. And so, yeah, these leaders. And there's numbers of them. You know, you mentioned a couple of them that are familiar probably to us in North America, but we found them in India and Indonesia and China and in places all over the world. And it really is a function of an extension of their own personal credibility. The easiest way to understand it is to look to ourselves. Again, one of the actions is start with yourself. And so when you think about your own personal relationships and you think about people that you trust, what are the things that come to mind about the high trust people, the people you can trust? They're people that they've got your back. If you misspeak, they're almost able to complete your sentences. They give you the benefit of the doubt when you're in a high trust relationship. And you contrast that to a low trust relationship where somebody is constantly undermining you and they can't be counted on. And when they walk into a meeting, they suck the air out of the room, et cetera. So we can look at these very personal attributes of who we trust and why. And high trust leaders are able, again, to subordinate, as we talked about in the last segment, subordinate their own personal agenda to the benefit of others, of their employees, of their customers, of their stakeholders, of their investors. And that is a really key attribute of leadership. And the benefit of that as a leader, as a organization, and Jim Senegal at Costco has demonstrated this, you end up with economic benefits. You actually win more. Yep. So by not having a scarcity mentality and not paying your people well, you actually lose. And so Senegal pays his people well. He takes good care of his customers. You can go back and get Costco and take in a return without a receipt. They got your back. They look it up. They trust you. They look it up in their system. They take care of their people. They pay them well, et cetera. So they have two key metrics, and there's numerous other ones we don't have time to get into, but the key metric of customer loyalty, the renewal rates on memberships for Costco are off the chart. His customers are extremely loyal. The employees are extremely loyal. The turnover in their employment, which is a very tremendous cost in organizations, their retention of talent and motivation of those people is extremely high. And so that pays off in benefits. So even though the tendency of leaders is to think, gosh, I need to exploit these different stakeholders to win is counterintuitive. You're better off if you bless those stakeholders then all things will be good. John Mackey at Whole Foods, for example, you know, their business model is really tremendous. They have a tremendous culture. And that's the end of the day at the business level. Building a high trust culture is huge. It makes all the difference, and it's the only sustainable form of success. And these companies that we're talking about, these leaders that we're talking about, by doing these gestures of servant leadership, both to their employees and to their customers and their other stakeholders, are building a culture and a reputation and a brand that will pay dividends for years to come.
Well, I certainly agree with that, and it's one of the paradoxes almost, though, isn't it, that some CEOs become so fixated on the quarter because that's the only way they're being measured that they do forget that there's that long growth, that long-term growth, and that really healthy culture that we create that actually creates a cycle of quarterly profits. But we have to have that long-term vision, like you said, with Costco. I mean, it's just, you've got to think bigger if you're going to be sustainable over a long period of time.
Well, and it's difficult because we have a comparison-based identity that's driven, at least in North America and throughout the world, in the education system, where we're graded against others and compared, et cetera. And then the financial and the stock market, you know, moment to moment, our earnings per share and all that, it's compared to everybody else in our industry. You know,
yeah.
So you're constantly having to subordinate and be driven by that. And Warren Buffett is a long-term investor. He's the most successful investor in the world. He's also an operator, and he plays long. And the companies that he can see the fundamentals, where they are behaving in these ways we're talking about and taking care of the stakeholders, that he can see the handwriting on the wall, that over time that is going to be the thing that's going to win. And
yep,
it's certainly,
you know,
proven
it's so
out.
True. Yeah, absolutely. A couple other leaders come to mind, like you mentioned, they're all around the world. We had Vineet Nayar, the CEO of HCL Technologies, on the show when I visited with him in Delhi. This last year, I believe now. But boy, he's one of those servant leaders that gets it as well. So let's talk about this from an organizational perspective for a moment, Greg. What can we do, or perhaps what are we doing in our organizations that might actually be not in our best interest? You know, so we've put a policy in place that we think is building and creating performance, but in fact is communicating we don't trust you and is eroding trust, is actually hurting our organization.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, again, it is counterintuitive, but we have a tendency to put in policies and procedures to try to prevent mistakes or things, certain behavior from happening again, and we do send that signal that we don't trust you. One of the first things Gordon Bethune, who was the CEO of Continental Airlines when they were in bankruptcy, he was the CEO at Continental Airlines, and he said when he came in as CEO, the employees were like, behaved like battered children. And the first thing he did, or one of the first things he did, is he went out in the parking lot and he burnt all the policy and procedure manuals and basically said to his team, "We're taking out a blank sheet of paper. I trust you. We're going to restore trust." And he wrote a book called From Worst to First. Continental was the lowest in the industry in 98, in 98, and then in less than 10 years they became number one, and now they've merged with United. And so it is counterintuitive as it is, trusting people is the better way to go. You've got to run your organization based upon the 97% of your employees that you can trust, not the 3% that you can't.
Absolutely, absolutely. So
there is a risk. We acknowledge that there's a risk. Again, we're not talking about, you know, unconditional trust.
Sure.
It's conditional. It's based upon criteria and holding each other accountable.
Yeah, but to your point as well, that you're not going against the 97. You're just going to address those one-offs as they come about with the 3%, as opposed to blanketing everyone with it.
Exactly, because think about the way, you know, the other part of the subtitle of the Smart Trust book is not only creating the prosperity, the business case for trust that we talked about, but the energy and joy. I mean, there is nothing more powerful than a high trust culture where people are energized and they know that they're trusted and they know they're going to be given the benefit of the doubt, because really all growth and innovation requires risk. And all your employees, if they're risk averse, if they know the hammer's going to come down on them, if they color outside of the lines, they're going to hold back. We hire people back in hands, they volunteer their minds and hearts.
You bet. You bet. From an individual perspective, and when it comes to leadership, you know, we've probably all experienced it where you hear a leader talk about we, but they really mean me, not we.
Yeah.
And it's really about themselves, you know. I think there's a lot of business incentives out there that really take care of the leader. And I'm not against great incentives and great pay and compensation, but I do wonder, have we created an environment where a leader is incentivized only to take care of themselves as opposed to making those around them successful? And what could we be doing to help build that trust? And would it be better if we had different incentives in place that actually made leaders more accountable for the people that are following them and made, you know, making them more successful?
Absolutely, and I'm a big advocate of pay for performance at all levels and for all stakeholders and taking into consideration the benefits to all stakeholders, not just the leader, but the employees, the customers, and the shareholders, if it's a public company, the investors. And you've got to have all of those different elements win if you're going to have a long-term success. You might be able to get short-term success by being selfish, but ultimately that's not going to last. And so, you know, one of the things that organizations can ask themselves, what signals do our policies and procedures, our systems and structure, are we a command and control structure, or are we a release style management in our organization? What signals are we sending in our systems, and are we suggesting to our people that we trust them, or are we suggesting that we don't trust them? And those things will ultimately, and the metrics, it's wonderful because this is becoming, this renaissance of trust is becoming to where this transparency in the information age, where more and more people, open book management, it used to be in organizations the leader could pad their own pockets and nobody would know, but now, particularly of course with public companies, but even in private companies, you know, where the books were all kept secret, now with this open book management and transparency, we're empowering our people, and which is holding the leaders accountable to be look to mutual benefit, but it's also ironically in their own selfish best interest, because if you can really get the whole team playing at this next level of play and leaning into it and bringing their hearts and minds to it as well as their hands and back, it really does benefit everybody, including the leader.
Boy, so true. You know, if there was one warning sign you would say we should really be watching for to discover if there's a low trust environment, what would that be?
Well, the easiest way for me to assess a culture in an organization quickly is to be in the break room or in the halls and just listen to the conversations. Are people gossiping about each other and criticizing each other, or are they acknowledging and praising each other? That one metric, and you can do it in surveys and assessments, and there's a lot of formal ways to do it, but just the informal way of listening to the chatter in an organization can give you a big signal. And the fastest way, and that's the penetrating question for companies to ask, do we allow our teams and our organization to gossip or not? And one of the fastest ways to shift and have a sea change in your organization is to agree to not gossip in your organization. And when somebody, the fastest way to solve that is when somebody comes to confess, Max, if Roy came to me and wanted to confess Max's sins, I would redirect you to him and not just talk about it behind his back. And
sure,
once somebody that gossips goes to two or three people to gossip about Roy and they're redirected back to Roy, they become clear that that's no longer acceptable. Now, yes, there are those people that are going to go underground. They're going to still do it. But the preponderant signal you send to the whole culture is we don't do that in our organization. And if you can nip that cynicism and that negative conversation in the bud, that will shift the trajectory of the future of a company faster than anything I know.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Greg, we have to take another quick break. But when we come back, we will continue this conversation. For Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, this is Max Brenner, Roy Sonneson, reminding you to keep it real. We'll be right back.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. Getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. We're going to finish off our conversation today with Greg Link, our guest, and learn some final pointers on smart trust. And always fascinating when you write a book. I'm curious, as you wrote it, were there any surprises that you experienced in writing it and getting it published?
One of the biggest surprises was that we found, we thought that we had an isolated circumstance, that this renaissance of trust was just something we were aware of because of our work. And the more that we researched, the more that we talked to people and asked questions, the more that we found that it really is a momentous shift, that people recognize that we can no longer operate our economy in the lie, cheat, and steal mode. We've got to restore trust in each other and in the economy and take the high ground, and that's going to affect the economy and each of our individual circumstances more than anything we can do. So we were very pleasantly surprised with the significance of the momentum that's been created around the world.
Good, good. Now, you and I know there's a lot of things that get in the way of making smart trust happen, and if you were to look at the most common hurdles that seem to roadblock smart trust in organizations, what is that, and how do you tend to recommend that organizations address that?
Well, the biggest roadblock is the behavior of the leader. In other words, you've got to walk your talk. Most companies have mission statements and platitudes that they say they aspire to. And the key, the art of the deal, and you can come up with all these inspiring things and hire on them and attract investors on them, but unless you perform, unless you do what you say you're going to do again, you're just not going to get anywhere. So the greatest roadblock is that incongruence of behavior that starts with the leader and goes throughout the entire culture. The way you treat each other, the way you treat your customers, et cetera, is that consistent? Are you walking your talk? Are you living up to what you say you are going to do as a business or as an organization? So that lack of alignment, that inconsistency is the greatest threat.
So we've got a leader in an organization who's incongruent, as you say. How can that be addressed?
Well, there's a number of ways to address it. Again, one of the actions that we find, the high-trust people start with themselves. So they're not just blaming it and all the employees pointing their fingers, oh, we got a bad leader, so it's hopeless. We've all got to take responsibility. And so, you know, there can be islands of high trust in a low trust culture. Departments and different leaders can set examples that hopefully can shift the momentum and draw attention to this better way of doing things that can sometimes convert a leader. Feedback is a tremendous mechanism, and sometimes that feedback needs to come from the board in the case of a CEO, but we found that most leaders, you know, they're in a position and they recognize very quickly it's in their selfish best interest to keep their stakeholders happy. And so by not attacking the person, but by identifying the behaviors, you can, in fact, because when you go to a CEO or you go to any leader and say, hey, I don't trust you, you're incongruent, that's not going to get you very far. But if you can identify some positive behaviors that they're exhibiting and acknowledge them for those, for the performance that they've done, for the results they're producing, et cetera, but then maybe draw some attention and say, you know, I'm really worried, though, that you're not being very transparent and you're really not listening, et cetera. So separate the person from the behavior. There is a hope that they can start to see the light a little bit. And if you don't have, the first thing to do when you're going to give somebody feedback is to check your own credibility with that person. So if you're the mail clerk, you're not going to have much credibility perhaps with the CEO, and you need to get a sponsor, what we call a trust bridge. You need to find somebody that is trusted and respected and has credibility with the person you're trying to influence as a sponsor to help you engage in some of those conversations. But it's very tough because, you know, managing up is difficult. The best way to do it is to start with yourself, manage your own department, your own entity, your own world in the best way possible and on the high ground, and hopefully that'll send the right signals and get the acknowledgement and awareness going in your organization. But don't be a victim. Don't just say, oh, hey, we got a bad leader, so it's hopeless and we're
right
in a bad situation.
Good, good. Greg, I want to be able to give you an opportunity to tell our listeners where they can learn more about your work and how to connect with you. What would be the best way?
Well, the best way is to get a copy of the book. You can do that at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or in bookstores and airports and around the world. And then if you want more, we have a website called SmartTrustBook.com. That's SmartTrustBook.com. And there's a number of resources. We have a number of downloads and video clips that they can look at that supplement the book, and other resources that are free that they can access. So that's the best place to start.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you for sharing what you have with us today.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're also on Twitter, at CoveyLink. So if they want to communicate with us that way, I know that's a big thing. We are active in social media also. But all that will be on smarttrustbook.com.
Good, good. Now, any last piece of advice that you would give to our listeners today who want to make their organization truly a high smart trust place to work?
Yeah, just aspire to it. Have high trust. You know, be the change, as Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world. So start with yourself, check your own credibility, and try to stand a little taller. And that's the best place to start.
Well, thank you for that example and for the great work that you and Stephen have put out together. It's wonderful.
Great. Well, thanks, Roy and Max. We appreciate what you're doing and the contribution you're making to help people be their best selves. We appreciate the opportunity.
Well, we're grateful you'd be on with us today. Thank you again for being a guest, and we've really enjoyed this show.
Thanks so much. You guys did a great job. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Tune in for our next show, where Max and I will continue our discussion on how to build relationships, inspire greatness, and create a workplace where people can thrive. Max and I welcome and, of course, encourage your comments and suggestions for other guests as well. Just simply go to rido.com/radio. That's rideau.com/radio. And give us your feedback. And please, tell us why you listen to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, and we'll send you a small token of our appreciation. We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. For more information about the Rideau Institute, visit us at rideau.com. Until next time, this is Roy Sonneson and Max Brown reminding you to keep it real.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Saunderson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.